Blog Talk Radio.
Speaks. Good afternoon. This is your host, Chuck Morse, Monday through Friday, 1 to 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, excuse me, right here in Boston, Massachusetts, the cradle of liberty, the Athens of America, the shining city on the hill. We've got Dr. Oktar Babuna coming on. He's calling in from Istanbul, hopefully shortly, in Turkey. Dr. Babuna is an activist on behalf of creationism. He's an opponent of Darwinism. He is talking in the Middle East about the influence of Darwinism and materialism, as he says, on Islam, which he contends is a negative thing. He came to my attention mainly because of my book, available on Amazon Kindle, The Monkey Trial, Evolutionary Politics in the Post-Traditional Age. Check it out. It's available there. It's a book. How many words? Almost 100,000 words. I worked very hard on this book. It took me well over a year to write this. And the thesis is one that I think resonates with Dr. Babuna, who is actually going out and making speeches and getting heckled and stirring people up both in Turkey, apparently, and in the Middle East and in Europe. I believe that he is with us now. Dr. Babuna, how are you this afternoon?
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure and honor to be with you. How are
Thank you?
You,
sir. Very well. Thank you for joining me. I was looking at some of your YouTube videos, and I admire your courage. You're out there speaking on this issue, but quite publicly, and you're taking both brickbats and praise for doing so. And it's not an easy issue to talk about, is it?
Thank you very much. Yes.
I'm just curious with regard to why this is a controversy in Islam at this point, because I didn't realize that the theory of evolution had such an impact in the Islamic countries.
Well, the Darwinism is being studied in all the schools throughout the Islamic world, including Turkey, and really directionally, and without giving any scientific evidence, which falsifies Darwinism. So in that sense, 99% of the people in the world in the 20th century believed in Darwinism as a scientific fact. However, scientific evidence is falsifies Darwinism, and it should be taught in the schools, actually. For example, the impossibility of the proteins to emerge by chance, which falsifies Darwinism at the very beginning, fundamentally. And also that there are no transitional forms, and the fossil evidence falsifies Darwinism. In fact, there are 400 million fossils. They are never mentioned in the school curriculum, actually, school books. And the problem with Darwinism is it inevitably leads to violence and to terrorism.
Well, I want to get into that in a minute, and I entirely agree with you, but your basic premise simply is that the theory of evolution, there is not a shred of proof to back it up, so therefore the science of it is presented as absolute fact, but in fact it's a theory, and it's a hypothesis, in my opinion, and your objection is that it is being taught as absolute scientific fact, and that people who disagree with it are attacked, and the same thing probably that happens in this country is happening in Turkey, I would imagine.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, evolution is falsified by Charles Darwin himself. If you look at in his book, Origin of Species, I'm going to read a very short, a brief quote from Charles Darwin. And Charles Darwin said in his book, Origin of Species, if my theory be true, numberless intermediate varieties linking most closely all of the species of the same group together must assuredly have existed. He says, evidence of evolution must have existed. Consequently, evidence of their former existence could be found only among fossil remains. So the evidence of evolution can only be found in the fossil remains, he says. But after that, he goes on. He says, wild species have descended from other species by insensibly fine gradations. Do we not everywhere see innumerable transitional forms? He said, if evolution is a fact, and there is a success of variations over billions of years, then why don't we see the transitional forms? But as by this theory, innumerable transitional forms must have existed, he says. Why do we not find them embedded in countless numbers in the crust of the earth?
After about a century and a half of looking for it, and, you know, I found the same quote, which is in my book also, The Monkey Trial, in that Darwin himself says in his journal that there would have to at some point be some fossil evidence that there had been a transitional species, and there's not. I mean, it's been 150 years since the publication, over 150 years since the publication of Origin of Species in 1859, and there is still not a shred of evidence to prove that any one species evolves into a superior species, or as the saying is, actually race, because the word species is just Latin for race, and that's what Darwin's theory is. It's a modern scientific race theory.
Yes, and you're right. I mean, after 150 years, for example, Niles Eldridge, a very prominent Darwinist paleontologist, a museum curator, as you know, he said the record jumps. That's where Niles Eldridge, the record jumps. And all the evidence shows that the record is real, he says. The gaps we see reflect real events in life's history, not the artifact of a poor fossil record. That's Niles Eldridge. Stephen Jay Gould, for example, he said the fossils have two features, stasis. They never change during their tenure on the Earth. And the second feature of the fossils evidence is sudden appearance. So that means, of course, creation, not evolution. Of course, if God would create through evolution, we would have the evidence of this. We would be defender of creation through evolution. But there is no evidence, no transitional forms. So why should we defend evolution if it's not a science?
Well, you know, the other thing is that I think that I know that Islam shares with Judaism and Christianity the belief that we are created in the men and women, it says in the book of Genesis, are created in the image of God. And that sentiment was echoed in the American Declaration of Independence when Jefferson said that all men are created equal. That is something that, putting aside the science, which I think is there, the idea is that we all are born equal, we all die equal, our souls are equal, we have equal rights under the law. And yet, if you accept the theory of evolution, you have to conclude that all men are not created equal, that we are all at different levels on the evolutionary chain, and that there are some people that are superior to others because of breeding, which is what the Darwinian theory is. It's a theory of breeding. Alleged superior members of a species mate with other superior members, and then they give birth to superior generations, and then they proceed to kill out the inferior ones, which, of course, we could get into the politics of it. But would I be correct to assume that Islam embraces that same idea as Judaism and Christianity?
Yes, definitely. I mean, I can give you an evidence from the Quran. And Allah says
Please.
In the Quran, I seek refuge in Allah from a cursed Satan. I created you as from a man and his wife and created you in nations and tribes. Mm. But Allah goes on in the verse, there is no superiority according to races, but there is according to the sincerity, Allah says. So Allah created nations and tribes to know each other, Allah says. So we created, there are, for example, Orientals, there are African-Americans, there are Eskimos, Aborigines, but just to know each other, it's just a color. There is no superiority according to the race, according to Quran as it stated, and only to the sincerity, of course. The most sincere ones, the prophets, for example, more superior because of their sincerity, but not according to the race.
Well, that's right, and I think that the Islamic language in the Quran is almost identical to that in the Torah, and that we share this idea, which is contrary to the Darwinian view. I mean, the Darwinians in the late 19th century were shooting Aboriginal people in Australia and taking their skulls back to laboratories to study them because they believed that, and Darwin said this in his second book, The Descent of Man, that the Aboriginals were closer to the baboon than they were to humans. So, You know, the only logical conclusion one could draw if they believe in the Darwinian theory, the unproven Darwinian theory, is that we are not equal, that we're all at different levels. And this is where the politics comes in. This is what you talk about. This particularly interests me, Dr. Babuna, when you point out that this is a philosophy of violence, of war. It is a philosophy that was the undergirding of both the Nazi socialist and the communist movements, in that they believed, and they believed it with all sincerity, that it was their job, in terms of the Nazis, to evolve the species by creating a superior species, one that they called the Übermensch. And in order to do that, they had to breed superior members, the blonde, blue-eyed members, to give birth to superior species, and at the same time isolate and eventually annihilate inferior members of the species who were contaminating the superior ones. And then, of course, Marx took the idea and ran with it and applied it to social organizations, that we would evolve into, you know, first capitalism and then socialism and then eventually the ultimate goal, which is communism, which all men would give up their individual identity and we would become an international beehive. So, you know, this is a very political idea, which I think goes to exactly why much of our elite establishment embraces it so fervently. It's the very cornerstone of their faith.
You're completely right. You have very powerful evidences. You're right. I mean, for example, Adolf Hitler said, take away Nordic Germans, nothing remains but the dance of apes. And he used Darwinism as the so-called scientific justification for bloody Nazi and fascist ideologies. Because, as you say, Charles Darwin said in his book, The Descent of Man, he said, at some future period, not very distant measured by centuries, the civilized races of man will almost certainly exterminate and replace the savage races throughout the world. And according to Charles Darwin, as you know, the white European man was the most evolved animals, and all other races, blacks, aborigines, Pakistanis, including Turks, are lower races close to monkeys, and will be exterminated. And these ideas, of course, were taken from Charles Darwin and applied into the fascism and Nazi ideology as fascism, the struggle between the races, and into the Marxism by Karl Marx as the struggle and fight between classes. And he used Darwinism as the dialectics of the nature. And he built on the Marxism on top of that as dialectics of the history. And he used Darwinism as a so-called scientific justification of Marxism. In, for example, Karl Marx said in one of the letters he wrote to Engels, this is the basis in natural history for our review. And he mentioned...
Yes, I have that in my book, too, yeah. Okay, my guest is Dr. Oktay Babunev from Istanbul. We were talking about the influence of Darwinism right now in the Islamic world, and that Dr. Babunev has been giving a lot of public speeches both in Turkey and in Europe. You're welcome to join the conversation, 347-327-9849. That number, again, is 347-327-9849. Please stay tuned. Dr. Oktay Babunev is my guest. This being a news-driven program, I should mention a breaking story here. Suicide bombing at U.S. Embassy in Turkey kills two. Turkey's prime minister says at an outlawed Marxist group is responsible for a suicide bombing in front of the U.S. Embassy in Ankara, which killed the bomber and a Turkish security guard. Just thought we would announce that. We could maybe develop the story as the program proceeds. Dr. Oktay Babunev is my guest. Dr. Babunev, you are going around and speaking on this topic quite vociferously, and I really admire that. Can you tell me how people are responding to you?
Well, actually, it's a long struggle of Mr. Adnan Oktay Harun Yahya from Turkey since 30 years, and we sent mailed 100,000s of copies of Atlas of Creation throughout the world to prominent academicians, to the universities, politicians in Europe and in the United States, free of charge. And that had a lot of impact, and I gave more than 1,000 conferences in major universities in U.S., U.K., Europe, Germany, Far East, Indonesia, Malaysia, Israel, Australia, Japan. So the response is very, very good. It's getting, Darwinism is going down, definitely, no question about that, and people are becoming more religious, because if you put in the subconscious mind of the people, that there is no creator. Life emerged by chance, and you owe your existence to chance, by natural, to the natural event, to random events. Of course, that, this inevitably, with the concepts of Darwinism, struggle for survival, survival of the fittest, and the strong individuals survive by crushing the weak individuals, it leads to violence and the terror. But if you put in the scientific evidences, it will definitely eradicate Darwinism, and people will understand there is a creator, because the complexity of the and the miraculous delicate balances throughout the universe shows there is a creator which is almighty and has an omnipotent mind and omnipotent power. That means, of course, we are responsible. And then, of course, we find out how, to live according to moral values such as, for example, justice, peace, tolerance, and compassion, mercy, love against all other people. And this is in three divine religions. In Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, it is the same. There is no difference in that point. So we live in the same God. We love the same prophets. There is compassion, mercy, love, tolerance, and justice. We just spoke of, for example, there was an attack. We feel sorry about that to American embassy in Turkey. But this is because of Darwinist education. You talked about the Marxist group. But if you put in the subconscious mind Darwinism, it inevitably leads to violence and the terror. You cannot stop that. But we know, for example, in Islam, murdering one innocent person, Allah says, is like murdering entire humanity. Saving one person's life is saving entire humanity. So there is no justification for terrorism. There is no justification for killing, murdering innocent people in Islam. It is haram. That means it is unlawful against the Quran. So we know radicalism and bigotry has emerged in throughout the Islamic world. There are so-called Islamic terrorists. But there is no Islamic terrorist.
Let me ask you this, Dr. Babuda. Do you draw a connection between the influence of Darwinism and Islamic terrorism?
Well, the, Islamic terrorism is a misconception, actually. Terrorism originates from Darwinism because, as you know, in the Muslim countries, because of Darwinist education, Palestine has become Marxist, Arab socialism. At the time, George Habash was a Marxist, as you know.
Saddam
was Marxist, Ba'ath mentality, and combined extreme nationalism with Arab socialism, which is Marxism. Libya, Gaddafi is Marxist, Darwinist.
Well, the Ba'ath socialist movement is a mix between Islam, which they keep around for window dressing, and socialism, and that is the political movement that gave birth to Gaddafi, to Assad, who is still a Ba'ath socialist, and Saddam Hussein. So, yes, I definitely agree.
Exactly. I mean, Syria, Marxist mentality is prevailing, and also in Egypt, Nasser, because of since Nasser's time, Marxist mentality, Jordan, Tunisia, everywhere, wherever you look, you see Darwinist, materialist, and Marxist mentality prevailing. So people distance away from religious concepts. Radicalism and extremism has emerged. And this is because of Marxist ideologies, violence, terror has emerged. But that does not have to do with the Islam, true Islam. In true Islam, the people of the book, Christians and Jews are called people of the book, and you cannot have enmity and hatred against them. Actually, Allah says monasteries, churches, synagogues are the places, mosques are the places to be protected. And Allah says with the people of the book, argue with them only in the kindest way. And Muslim men are allowed to marry Jewish and Christian wives. We can eat your meal. It's halal for Muslims. It's lawful. So we can socialize with them. And if you know, if you might remember at the time of the Ottoman Empire, we lived in peace with Jews and Christians for centuries. And the synagogues and churches, they had the freedom of worship.
The Ottoman Empire was very peaceful up until the time that the Young Turks, who were Marxist, they took over and they made the Sultan into a figurehead, and then they launched a genocide against the Armenians. So I think that you make a very good point on that. I mean, it certainly is an aberration of traditional Islam, and that and also the mullahs that surround the Ayatollah Khomeini, a lot of them, and I did some research on this for a book that I'm hoping to publish soon, that that they were trained in Moscow. They were communists. Dressed in traditional Islamic garb to make it look, you know, I mean, it was the same ideology. But the underlying philosophical theme there is that the only morality in the theory of evolution is the famous statement, survival of the fittest. Power begets power. The whole idea is to gain earthly power and then to transform mankind into a superior being, whether it be the Nazi version, which is a superior being biologically, or whether it be the communist version, which is a superior being socially or politically. There is no basic moral underpinning. Human beings are expendable. we're not created in the image of God. We're just animals that are evolving. This is fascinating.
Yes. Yeah.
Now,
yeah, you're completely correct. Yes.
Yeah. Dr. Babuna, have you encountered a lot of resistance from your speeches? Because I know that you've been speaking on this topic in college campuses across Europe, across Asia. What's going on with that? I mean, are you experiencing what sort of opposition are you experiencing?
Yes, you're right. I mean, at the beginning we had a lot of opposition, but now it's getting weaker and weaker, and it becomes much more powerful because we give scientific evidences. I mean, for example, if I talk about Darwinism, we talk about proteins. Of course, we check if the proteins can emerge by chance or not. If for a single protein molecule to emerge by chance, it is impossible. There are trillions of different protein molecules in the millions of species. And out of the trillions of protein molecules, single protein molecule cannot emerge by chance because other proteins, at least 100 enzymes, proteins, must exist to produce proteins. Proteins can only be produced by proteins. This is not enough. DNA must coexist because right sequence of the protein is coded in the DNA. This is not enough. Yep. Energy is required. The mitochondria, the energy organelle of the cell, must exist. A complete living cell must exist to produce the first protein. And this is a fatal blow to Darwinism. So if you give scientific evidences, people are convinced very easily. That's the reason why the Darwinism is going down. And we know there are many polls throughout the world, in the United States, in Europe, in the United Kingdom. For example, in 2008, there was a poll published in The Guardian, and they said 75% of the British people do not believe in Darwinism anymore. Only 25% of the British people. I'm sorry?
No, that's amazing. I mean, that's substantial. I mean, it seems to be a growing movement. That's great.
Yeah, that was 2008. They said only 25% of the people believe without any doubt, any question into Darwinism. So you see, Darwinism was most strongest in the United Kingdom. Now it is very weak now, getting weak. And in the Middle East, the same way, in the Far East, wherever we look, we see that because scientific evidences cannot be denied. It is science.
That's right.
Of course,
I don't think Darwinism was ever something that was embraced by most people. It was always an elitist establishment view, very much amongst the powerful, and that it's been indoctrinated. I mean, we're all taught Darwinism from a very early age, and we also get the message pretty clearly, at least in this country, that if you disagree with it, then, you know, you're seen as somehow an ignorant or evil person. I mean, this goes back to the Scopes trial and the way people were portrayed in that movie that disagreed with, the position of Clarence Darrow and John Scopes, that they're ignorant, that they're backward. I know that when I ran for Congress, I had a very bitter, long campaign against Barney Frank, and we brought up all kinds of issues. But the only time I saw him get angry was when he brought up the fact on a television show here in Boston that I had written an article years earlier questioning the theory of evolution. He was visibly angry over this. He looked like he was going to blow a gasket over it. And it was because it was something that's so fundamental. And he held it up and said, this is proof that Chuck Morse does not deserve to hold public office. He believes this. I mean, this is like... Yeah, and unfortunately, a lot of people believed him. You know, they were like, yes, isn't that? It was shocking. You know, it's like a scandal. And, that's sort of, I think, what we're all up against here. But when you tell me that more and more people are actually taking a look at the science of this and seeing how bizarre it is, I mean, the idea, first of all, that life in general somehow just popped out of nowhere because of the colliding of two inanimate objects, and then somehow out of that life evolves these complex creatures just by mating. I mean, it's obviously absurd. It's something that doesn't make any sense by any lights. So, you know, you're doing a great job, I think, Akhtar, in terms of exposing this. And it looks to me like you're having a lot of influence, and I really appreciate that. Now, do you have any books out that you'd like to talk about, or where can people get information about you and your work?
Yes. First of all, the website of Mr. Harun Yahya. Harun Yahya is his pen name, actually, Mr. Adnan Oktar. He has 300 books translated to 75 languages and 800 websites. The main website for information would be www.harunyahya.com. Harunyahya.com, and I will spell it actually, H-A-R-U-N-H-A-Y-A-H-Y-A, harunyahya.com. Brothers and sisters there can download his books free of charge, and hundreds of documentaries and 300 books. And some of them are science, politics, and religiously related, actually. So they can read them, increase their knowledge, and please spread this truth to other people, because Darwinism is not an innocent ideology. It's actually a religion. Now, I want to read a quote from Richard Dawkins, actually. Dawkins said, before Darwin, it was difficult to be an intellectually fulfilled atheist, and Darwin made it easy to become an intellectual atheist. And that is the reason why Darwinism is defended against so many scientific evidences. And there is a,
yes.
You know, as you talked about a little while ago, there is a Darwinist dictatorship. Of course, we know that, and in some in the schools, for example, people are against Darwinism. They are expelled from universities. They, you know, in the media, they are being attacked. That is true. There is a Darwinist dictatorship to protect Darwinism nonsense as like a religion and an ideology. But with the scientific struggle, it can be eradicated. And that's the reason our alliance is very important. Alliance of the Christians, Jews, and Muslims coming together. This will solve all the conflicts, actually, in the Middle East, everywhere. It will bring a golden age. It will bring progress in science, technology, and arts. It eradicates this ideology of violence and the terror and the bloodshed. In the 20th century, everybody suffered from that. World War I, World War II, communism, fascism, and then racism, anarchism, terrorism, all founded upon the concepts of Darwinism. However,
yes,
in three divine religions, there is compassion, mercy, love, tolerance, justice. What is that we cannot share? There is enough land for everybody in the world. So let's ally together. Even the unbelievers are the first-class citizens. Of course, nobody can force anybody to believe in anything. So with our alliance, good people coming together like yourself, for example, thank you very much for doing this program. It is very good, actually. And
thank
so
you.
We will live in peace, in compassion, mercy, love, and everybody will be happy from that.
No, look at it. I mean, I think, first of all, we have to realize that in the United States, Darwinism, the theory of evolution, that is the state religion. It's legal here. That was declared as such by the Supreme Court in several court cases. And by the state of first by the state of Tennessee, and then eventually by the Supreme Court. And the way they did this in the United States was that they simply declared Darwinism as a science, not as a religion, and therefore it is the legal doctrine. It's the official creation story in the United States, and to oppose it is actually at least certainly in our school systems and in our public schools, you're going against the law now. You're not allowed to present any alternative creation theories. There's only one creation theory, and that's the theory of evolution. But what you're saying is that in spite of this kind of monopoly, if you will, on this particular point of view, people are beginning to question it. I've advocated in my book that the theory of evolution be taught as a philosophy, and creationism also be taught as a philosophy, not as a religion, and let students take a look at the two different philosophies and let them compare and contrast them and let them argue about it, rather than trying to insist that Darwinism is science when there's not a shred of proof. And I think that that seems to be generally to be where things are going. I hope it is.
Yes, I definitely agree with you. And Mr. Adnan Oktar says Darwinism should be definitely taught in the schools. So you cannot force anybody to learning from something. He says also Marxism should be taught in the schools, fascism should be taught in the schools, Satanism, Buddhism, and all three divine religions should be taught in the school. But if you teach Darwinism in detail, for example, he says they can put it like 100 pages talk about Darwinism, and then only 3-4 pages for evidences which falsify Darwinism is enough. Impossibility.
Well, I don't even think they have that.
I'm sorry?
I mean, there's not even that much in the school system in the United States. There's just no questioning it at all. It's just presented as hard science. People are taught
I know,
this is how the world began, and that's that. I mean, there's to question it is still a big, big taboo, as I found out. It's just not done. Now, the theory of evolution has made major inroads in religion, certainly in Judaism and Christianity, and I would imagine Islam as well. I mean, how are they doing that?
Well, there is nothing about evolution in the Quran. There is always examples of sudden creation in the Quran. For example, the transformation of Moses' staff when he throws this on the ground, it transforms into a living snake all of a sudden with the word be of God. And then Jesus gives the shape to a model like a bird and breathes into that in the Quran. It's stated, and it transforms into a living bird. And then their angels are created. Of course, they are not created through evolution. There is nothing about evolution in the Quran. What some Muslims fall into the trap, they see Darwinism as a majority, and they try to find a middle path in between Darwinism and Islam, and they try to twist, twisting some verses in the Quran, they try to put evolution in the Quran, but there is nothing about evolution in the Quran. And we know this from the scientific evidence. We have 400 million fossils, more than enough. But there are no transitional forms, no pathological, asymmetrical transitions.
You know, that's quite a statement, I suppose, for a Muslim. You could say, exactly show me where in the Quran does it mention the theory of evolution? And I, as a Jew, could say, where in the Torah? I don't know if I could get away with that in my community, but where in the Torah does it say the theory of evolution? It says that we have, and by the way, science, a lot of geneticists now say, speaking of science, that they believe that all of mankind is descended from one mother. They call it the mitochondrial Eve, and more recently from one father whom they call the Y chromosome Adam. So if we're going to talk science and strict science, there's actually more scientific evidence from the field of genetics that point to at least an image of or an approximation of the Genesis story. Nothing that indicates that we simply life formed out of the crashing together of dead objects and that, as Darwin said, we all sort of emerged out of a warm, small pond. I mean, the whole idea is preposterous if you think about it. Like, if you take a look out of the microscope of the eye of a bee, you're going to see thousands of perfectly geometrically shaped shapes and colors all laid out absolutely perfectly. Darwin himself in his diary said that the sight of a peacock's feather made him sick. And the reason it made him sick was because when you take a look at one single peacock's feather with all of its perfectly aligned and intricate shapes, all, you know, absolutely perfect with the colors, you cannot believe that that simply happened because of random mating. There's obviously some kind of a design to it. Maybe even an intelligent design. Anyway, I want to... Yeah, please.
Yeah, life emerged all of a sudden. The first cyanobacteria fossil, which found in Australia Church region, emerged all of a sudden in 3.8 billion years ago, cyanobacteria, which can do photosynthesis. We have cyanobacteria today. So they never changed for 3.8 billion years. Emerges all of a sudden, which can do photosynthesis. And in fact, this is the only explanation, because we know from the genetics and molecular biology, there is no mechanism that Allah created, this is a scientific fact, which can generate new genetic information. So we had all the living things with all of the complexities all of a sudden. For example, at the Cambrian period, about 525 million years ago, 540 million years ago, 50 different phylums, phylums mean different animal groups according to body structure, appear all of a sudden. Only before the Cambrian period, only three phylum exists. In Cambrian, 50 of them exist. All of a sudden, with complex eye systems, circulations, gills appear all of a sudden, and they decrease up to 35 until now. So this is of course, creation. Sudden appearance means creation. Cyanobacteria, the first life, appears all of a sudden. And that is the reason why Richard Dawkins was asked in the movie Expelled to explain the origin of life. You know what he said in this movie? He couldn't explain the origin of life in the Earth. He said, I don't know what happened, but he said aliens from the space.
Oh, my God, really?
The life from the Earth. This is,
oh, that's
of course,
funny.
That means he admitted that life could not emerge by chance like evolution states in the Earth, but we know the physical laws everywhere is the same. So impossibility of life emerged in this Earth is everywhere the same in the galaxies. Proteins cannot emerge by chance anywhere in the universe. That means he admitted life could not emerge by chance.
Well, you know, he was kind of admitting that it had to have occurred spontaneously. Even Noam Chomsky, right here at MIT, who is considered one of the nation's experts in linguism, as a linguist, he said, and he actually said it on my program, I interviewed him, that all language occurred spontaneously. It didn't evolve.
Yes.
Somehow it just happened instantaneously. All men, all over the world, they had the ability to speak, and they began to speak. And I asked him, I said, doesn't that seem to indicate that the Bible is true? And he's, no, of course not. We have theory of evolution. But he didn't really connect those dots. But what you're saying and what the Bible says basically is that these things were, that we are who we are and we were who we were, that a man today is no different than Moses or Jesus or anyone going way back. We're not evolved. We are the same. I mean, the fact that we're bigger and they were fatter and they were healthier, that's not because we've evolved. It's because we have more knowledge in terms of how to save our own lives. And we know how to build refrigerators and we know how to build superhighways, and we've made life easier for us. We don't have to hunt for food all the time. But we're not evolved biologically. We're the same. We're the same people as we always were, and that there is, you know, we're immutable. I mean, that we're created in the image. It's not an evolving species.
Yes. We know from genetics and molecular biology, as I stated, there is no mechanism which generates new genetic information. So there is only mechanism from genetics
right.
and molecular biology, the shuffling of the genes, which means the shuffling of the genes, different combination of genetic information is generated, but all already existing genetic information, and that generates variation, different human races, for example, the blacks, orientals, white people. So, but this is not evolution because there is no new genetic information, and genetic information is the same from the very beginning. I know Noam Chomsky, yes, he admitted actually in his books that you're right, that the language grammar, ability for the speak with the grammar, he says, grammar so complex we cannot even explain it, must have been innate from the birth. So, for example, 3-4-year-old child speaks English, speaks Turkish, or speaks French with a very complex grammar, but it's not by thought by the parents or anybody else. You cannot teach grammar to anybody because you cannot explain the grammar. So Noam Chomsky actually admits that
yes.
this must be innate, that's like something inspired this grammar to people. And that is our soul, actually. You know, that must have,
right.
that makes us different from the apes. You know, we can speak, we can make civilizations, we can build cities, we can take the electron microscope and do research on our own because we are humans with soul. Apes are
that's
apes,
right.
humans are
and when
soul.
Adam named the when Adam named the plants and he named the animals, that was the beginning of human reason. I mean, it was something that happened spontaneously. But I've interviewed Oktar. I've interviewed scientists. I mean, I've done a lot of programming on this topic over the years, and people who are defenders of evolution. And what they do is they'll hold up two different species, like two different fruit flies, and there'll be a big scientific peer review article about this, and they'll say, look, one of them has spots and the other one doesn't. This proves evolution. And my response is it doesn't prove anything. All it proves is that they're two different fruit flies. But, you know, they will eventually admit, I mean, they may be yelling at me and screaming and kicking, and they may even hang the phone, but they will eventually admit that there is no proof that one has evolved into a superior member. This just, and that's because there is no proof. And it's very important simply to point that out. But when you do, the reaction can be pretty bombastic, I must say.
Yes. I mean, we know today in detail in genetics and molecular biology, there is only mechanism of shuffling of the genetic information. And through the replication of the DNA, the genetic information is passed from generation to generation, but it's shuffled in individuals and at the groups in the subspecies level, and that generates variation. But variation is not evolution because there is no new genetic information, no new proteins, no new organs, no new
exactly.
species. It is a mechanism created by God that generates variation, which is, for example, there are smaller dogs, there are German shepherds, There are dinovirus, there are larger ones, but this is variation at the subspecies level. There is no new genetic information, and this genetic
Adaptation. It's adaptation, which is why, for example, some people have darker skin than other people because they live, their ancestors live closer to the equator, and so you need to have darker skin to protect you from the sun rays. Whereas if you live up in the, you know, in Norway, you have lighter skin because there's a there's less sun, and there's a longer, you know, winter, so you, your body, your skin needs to absorb more sun. So you, you know, it's, this is not, it's not a matter of evolution, unless of course you're a racist. I mean, it's simply a matter of adaptation. You're adapting over time to the environment. It's not anything more than that. I mean, this is, you know, biologically speaking, genetically speaking, we're the same. I mean, the, you know, the Laplander is the same as the, you know, as someone from the Congo. There's no difference. It's just, it's just an, a different adaptation.
Yes. We know today, which makes us with different skin colors, is at least three genes, probably more than that. Maybe five genes. We don't know the exact number. And different combination of these genes, they are called alleles, actually. Different combination of these genes generate different skin color. But these genes have been existing from the very beginning. There is no mechanism that can generate new genetic information. There is only replication and shuffling of the genes. And this genetic information, which may give the skin colors, has been existing from the very beginning. Of course, this is not evolution. And adaptation is. There is mechanisms of adaptation created. We know this genetically also today for molecular biology. For example, if you put a bacteria in an environment where there is glucose, the bacteria uses, they call it operons actually, the gene groups close together, which metabolizes glucose. But if you take this bacteria, for example, E. coli, put in another environment where there is only lactose but no glucose, this bacteria shuts down the genes which produces the enzymes to metabolize glucose, and instead it opens up another genetic information which uses lactose as a metabolite, metabolizes lactose, produces the proteins, enzymes which metabolizes lactose. This is called adaptation. But the mechanism of adaptation is this genetic information which produces the proteins, metabolizes the glucose and lactose, exists from the very beginning. It only shuts off when there is in the environment there is glucose or lactose. But this is not evolution. This is a beautiful mechanism created by God. And this mechanism of adaptation exists in all the living beings.
That's right. I mean, it doesn't evolve. It's just part of the nature of human beings and probably of animals. It's not something that we've got more of or less of. And, you know, I like to remind people that the word to evolve means to become superior. It's to become better. It's not a a static term. You know, when somebody evolves, like they said, Barack Obama evolved on the issue of gay marriage, which whether you or I agree with that or not, the point is that what they were saying was he had grown. He had become more enlightened, if you will. And so the word evolve is used in that manner, and that's exactly how Darwin used the word, that the species was evolving into superior planes, whereas eventually out would pop a new species. That's what this theory is, and it's wrong. It's bizarre. And it's dangerous politically. When you put it into a political and social context, it's dangerous. I think the reason why our international establishment types have embraced this and have insisted on it is because it is atheistic. It does replace God in heaven with, in people's minds anyways, with them as the great administrators. And they can then manipulate. They believe all rights come from them. I mean, rights are not rights. They're privileges that are granted by the state, which they worship. Anyway, but I want to thank you so much for joining me, Dr. Oktar Babuna.
Thank you very, very much. And we love Americans. Americans are very nice people, sincere people, highly educated. And, you know, majority of Americans are very religious people. So I hope a world without Darwinism. You know what Richard Dawkins said recently? He said, "I don't want to live in a Darwinist world," he said. And he is right in that, because Darwinism, wherever Darwinism goes in, it brings only harm to the society. It brings harm to the people. So we hope there's a golden age is coming. We're living in the end times according to three divine religions. And Jesus is our prophet. We love him. We obey him. And in the Quran, it is definitely stated Jesus will return in the end times. And this is the times we are living in. And the Mahdi of Islam and the King Messiah of Judaism is the same person. because the signs given in the Torah and the Hadith are exactly the same. So this is the times, end times, because all the signs came to be true, given in the Hadith and in the Torah, in the Bible. And there will be a golden age without Darwinism and materialism and without these ideologies of suffering and violence and the terror. So a golden age is coming with progress in science, technology, and arts. So this is the time for alliance of the Christians, Jews, and Muslims, and this entire world will change. And this is very close by, behold.
Well, amen to that. And I'd like to please stay in touch with me and let me know what you're up to from time to time. I'd like to have you back, and I'll be sending you over a podcast of this interview, and let's work together on these things.
Definitely. And, thank you very, very much. May God bless you. May God bless America.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Oktay Babuna. You're listening to Chuck Moore Speaks. We'll be right back after these messages.
Thank you.
We are back, 347-327-9849, 347-327-9849. If you'd like to get in on the final segment, I want to thank again Dr. Oktay Babuna for joining me from Istanbul. Dr. Babuna, in case you haven't noticed, is an activist on behalf of creationism. He's an opponent of Darwinism. He is speaking in his own home country of Turkey and in Europe at colleges, and he's talking to people about simply the fact that the theory of evolution is not proven, it's not hard science, and once one comes to that conclusion, then it opens up possibilities in a lot of other areas as well. And, of course, I want to take a quick opportunity to mention my book, The Monkey Trial, Evolutionary Politics in the Post-Traditional Age, now available on Amazon Kindle. It's only $3.75. I shouldn't say only, that's actually a lot of money, but $3.75, you can order it, and it comes right to you into your Kindle or any other Android device. And also, there's my latest book, which is The Count of Fabians, Republicans in the Age of Obama. This is my commentary on post-election after the defeat of Mitt Romney this last November. And by the way, I mean, speaking of which, and that's also available on Amazon Kindle for $2.99. The economic indices are not good. Apparently, people were just hit with a new Social Security tax. I wonder if those same people who are complaining about that and grumbling, I wonder, did they vote for Barack Obama? I bet you a lot of them did. Elections have consequences. Had Mitt Romney won the election, we wouldn't be having these big increases in taxes because, or at least we would less likely have them. We might, but, it was something that at least he ran on in terms of not having. And if he had been elected, he would have been, you would have had the Republicans in Congress empowered. We wouldn't be seeing them demonized as obstructionists and as causing gridlock. Instead, we'd be listening to them. They do represent their constituents. And we wouldn't have this tax increase. We wouldn't see the phenomena. And I think this coming year we're going to see the effects of Obamacare and how much it's going to cost everybody. I didn't read the article, but there was a headline in the Drudge Report that said that Obamacare is going to cost, according to the IRS, every taxpayer $20,000 a year. Let me just see if I can find that. Here it is. This is from IRS, cheapest Obamacare plan will be $20,000 per family. This is from CNS News today. In a final regulation issued on Wednesday, the Internal Revenue Service assumed that under Obamacare, the cheapest health insurance plan available in 2016 for a family will cost $20,000 a year. Now, that's not coming up right now because this is 2013, but I think that the bad news is going to become more apparent as the years go on and as these various things kick in. Now, that's, again, from President Obama's IRS. That's not some right-wing group. It's not, a conservative thing. This is the IRS saying this yesterday in a report. It says as follows. Under Obamacare, Americans will be required to buy health insurance or pay a penalty to the IRS. The IRS's assumption that the cheapest plan for a family will cost $20,000 a year is found in examples the IRS gives to help people understand how to calculate the penalty they will need to pay the government if they do not buy a mandated health plan. Now, mandated health plan, I assume, is something that involves a plan that's been approved by the government. The examples point to families of four and families of five. Okay, well, maybe that's not a big increase from what they're paying now, but I have a feeling it is. Both of which the IRS expects in its assumptions to pay a minimum of $20,000 a year. The annual individual national average bronze plan premium for a family of five with two adults and three children will be $20,000, the regulation says. Bronze will be the lowest tier health insurance plan available. In other words, it could be more than that, under Obamacare after silver, gold, and platinum. Under the law, the penalty for not buying health insurance is supposed to be capped at either the annual average bronze premium, 2.5% of taxable income, or $2,085 per family in 2016, which doesn't seem to – well, I mean, I don't know if that's a far cry from $20,000, even though at the beginning of the article they say that it would be pegged to the bronze plan, which they say is $20,000. So that's a little confusing. The whole thing is confusing. In the new final rules published on Wednesday, IRS set in law the rules for implementing the penalty Americans must pay if they fail to obey Obamacare, the mandate to buy insurance. To help illustrate these rules, the IRS presented examples of different situations families might find themselves in. In the examples, the IRS assumes that families of five who are uninsured would need to pay an average of $20,000 a year to purchase a bronze plan in 2016. Using the conditions laid out in the regulations, the IRS calculates that a family earning $120,000 a year that did not buy insurance would need to pay the penalty. And that penalty would be $2,400 in 2016. For those wondering how clear the IRS calculations of this new penalty rule are, here is one of the actual examples. And then the article goes on to give various examples. You know, to my way of thinking, this is a little confusing, but nevertheless, it's going to be kicking in its full force in 2016 as opposed to now, which brings up an issue of how Congress and crafts laws. I mean, you would think that by conventional standards, if they were going to pass a law, the law would take effect immediately or as soon as possible, as soon as the regulations and the actual agency could be drawn up, which could be, I don't know, 3 months, 6 months, not 5 years later. I mean, it seems very deceptive to me that they would do this and they would sort of implement it in tiers. It doesn't give people a chance to really know, first of all, what they were voting for, because they don't actually feel the results. A more honest situation would be for people to feel the effects of a law immediately or as soon as possible, so they can then know whether or not they would support it. In the words of Attorney General Harry Daugherty, who served in the Coolidge administration, the best way to get rid of a bad law is to enforce it. And that's what I think is going to start happening here. Unemployment rate is back up to 7.9%. 8,500 Americans left the labor force in Obama's first term. They say 170,000 new jobs were created in January, but they also say here that 350,000 jobs were lost in January. So you do the math. You know, I mean, it's sort of like interesting to me because I'm listening to NPR now a lot here in Boston now that all the other talk show hosts were stripped off the air. And I heard an economist yesterday talk about this being good news, you know, somehow that they're trying to give a positive spin to the fact that unemployment is now sitting at 7.9%. That I don't know how they twisted it, but somehow this was a sign of good news. You know, this is, You know, this is the official media. I mean, I don't think that they get away with it now more in Boston because they've taken the other talk shows off the air. And I suppose that people are going to listen to that and they're going to say, they're going to shake their head and say, oh, good. This is great news. Anyway, what else is going on? Massive revisions to the earlier numbers. We now know that the fourth quarter reports were released actually on Monday of this week, and they indicated that the economy had shrank in the fourth quarter of 2012. And we also know that that was completely contradicting the fact that 1 week before the election, we got reports coming out of the media that said that the economy had improved, which were lies, obviously. You know, I suppose that the economists or people who wanted to not see the election affected, they waited until after the election. They waited until after the inauguration. And now here on a quiet news day, they've released the bad news, which is that the economy did not grow in the fourth quarter of 2012. It shrank. You know, the job numbers went up. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was stagnant. The gross national product went down. You know, the general economic indices were flat. But, you know, I suppose that nationally they do what the Boston Globe and what they used to always do in Boston, and I've been observing Boston for over, you know, probably 20 years. They wait till after an election before they release the bad news. You know, I mean, just, you know, they did this in the 2010 election here in Massachusetts. It didn't happen in the rest of the country, where you saw these great glowing stories about how wonderful the Massachusetts economy was doing and how businesses are expanding. And then after the election and after Deval Patrick is safely back in office and after the Democratic congressional delegation, which is made up of cookie cutters, that they're all nicely ensconced, then in December, on a cold day, they release the truth, which is that the economy stinks, and they release the figures. But it was interesting how it was held abeyance until after the election. That is typical of Massachusetts politics, but I think it's interesting that it's becoming somewhat of the norm nationally. Ultimately, I don't think they're going to get away with it. I think that the economy is facing some very difficult times, unfortunately, in these coming years. And I predict that this time around, President Obama and the Democrats are not going to get away with they're not going to get away with blaming poor old George Bush. The Bush has gone back to his ranch in Texas a long time ago, his ecologically modest ranch and his correct ranch. And he's going to get the blame for it because he deserves it. His policies have been negative in terms of improving an economy. He has continued, his main cause, his main championing is how to raise taxes and how to increase the deficit by busting through the debt ceiling and printing, asking the Federal Reserve to print more money. There are going to be consequences for that, and they are going to be felt in the next couple of years. There's going to be, I think, an increase in unemployment. There's going to be more stagnation. And I think that this could mean that in the next midterm election, people are going to say, okay, that's enough. We've had enough. And they're going to vote in large numbers against Democratic candidates and against Obama's candidates. And that'll be it. I mean, I mean, it's not something that any of us are happy about because we want to see the economy do better. But that appears to be the direction that things are going. Anyway, we're reaching toward the end of the program. So, again, I want to take a brief opportunity to mention my books available on Amazon Kindle, The Monkey Trial, Evolutionary Politics in the Post-Traditional Age, The Count of Fabians, Republicans in the Age of Obama, both available now on Amazon Kindle. Check them out. You can order them and you can download them onto any of your Android apps. Check out my blog site, chuckmorespeaks.com. And I shall return, God willing, Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here in Boston. This is Chuck Morse. Have a nice afternoon, everybody.